The following is a Cartoonerific Studios presentation.
Welcome to Cartoon Fun. It's Cartoonerific. Yeah!
Well, welcome to the Cartoonerific Classic Animated Cartoon Podcast. I am Brian Mitchell, and I am the host of this wonderful show. Back in the 50s, actually the late 50s, somewhere around 1956, 57, TV had become a major competitor to motion pictures, and the motion picture studios were actually afraid of TV. And so a lot of them were kind of late into getting into producing for television, but they eventually came around. But in the late 50s, the thought was that people are coming to the theaters for the features and not coming to the theaters for the shorts. The shorts are kind of an add-on. It's kind of a surprise, but people are going to the theater to see Gone with the Wind or the Ten Commandments or whatever. They're not really there to see a short cartoon. So what ended up happening was studios started cutting back. And in the case of Disney, even though they still had an animation division, they kept some shorts people and they would produce an occasional 10, 15, 20 minute short subject to go with one of the movies. The thinking was that they didn't need a shorts department anymore. So the shorts department was cut. And the same thing happened at MGM. MGM decided they didn't need any more of these cartoons. They had enough in their backlog. They didn't need to keep paying all these people to produce these cartoons when they already had a bunch of cartoons that they could just re-release to the theater. So MGM laid off all their people producing Tom and Jerry and Droopy cartoons. And Hanna-Barbera, who were the directors there, producers and directors, they ended up starting up their own studio. There's a long story that's very involved, but I won't go into that today. You can find that elsewhere, but we'll touch on it in the future. But basically, Bill Hanna already had something going, and it was going to be a commercial production company doing television commercials. And George Sidney, who was a producer at MGM, actually got them together, created the studio Hanna-Barbera Enterprises. And the three would be partners. It would be George Sidney, it would be Joe Barbera, and Bill Hanna. So they started producing not just commercials, but also series. They got a series deal to do the Rough and Ready Show, which was a very, very low budget TV show. And so they ended up producing that, and it did really well. And it went on for a couple of more years, but then they came up with something for the next season, which was the Huckleberry Hound Show, which introduced Yogi Bear and, of course, Huckleberry Hound and Mr. Jinx and Pixie and Dixie the Mice. And that show won an Emmy Award. So anyway, fast forward a few years, Hanna-Barbera had a tremendous amount of work, and they needed people. Well, they had the cream of the crop basically being let go from Disney. They had their whole staff from MGM, which basically most of them came over to Hanna-Barbera. They started recruiting people. They started going after top people in different studios. So two of the people that they got were Michael Maltese, who was a great writer over with Chuck Jones at the Warner Brothers studio doing shorts. And they got Warren Foster, who was another great story guy. They brought him over. So they had all this talent, and they kept recruiting more and more people. So a top artist over at Disney, Iwo Takamoto, took a job over at Hanna-Barbera. He became a key guy there. Another gentleman we had on here, Willie Ito became a top layout artist with Hanna-Barbera. So anyway, Hanna-Barbera was basically getting all these great people. And, you know, there was an advantage to working at Hanna-Barbera. The big advantage was, yes, they had to produce work a lot faster, but most of them were paid better. And it was an easier going atmosphere working at Hanna-Barbera. The product reached screens faster. So if you're working on a feature film, sometimes you wouldn't see your work on that big screen in theaters for 3-4 years, or maybe more. This stuff was reaching TV screens much, much faster, and so they could see their work on the screen. And so there were advantages to working at Hanna-Barbera and working at TV studios. Sometimes you're just given room to do whatever you want. And in a bigger studio where everything's kind of hanging on every drawing or every scene, maybe not so much room. But anyway, a lot of top talent was over at Hanna-Barbera. They had Charles Nichols and Hal Ambrough, Ken Muse, Walt Purgoy, who was a top designer artist at Disney, was Hanna-Barbera's head of background. So there were a lot of great, great talents working at the Hanna-Barbera studio. Well, the gentleman we have on today, he's another great talent that worked over there. He actually worked on some really wonderful, wonderful films. Gay Paris, he was in production design on that. He also worked on the Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol in production design. That was for UPA. He was a background artist over at Warner Brothers before moving to UPA. And then he moved into Hanna-Barbera Studios and worked on what's considered to be a classic, Charlotte's Web, and another classic. He worked as one of the top artists there on Scooby-Doo, Where Are You?, which has lasted a long, long time. I mean, the first Scooby-Doo was from 1969. It's still extremely popular today. You know, who knew? But I know I loved it as a kid, and there are many people still loving it today. Anyway, he's coming on next. His name is Bob Singer, and stay tuned. He's an animation legend, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Cartoonerific Podcast, classic animated cartoons with your host animator, Brian Mitchell. And now it's time for our special Cartoonerific guest.
Well, the gentleman I have on today, he is a legend. I am honored to have him on. He is an amazingly young 95 years old. And he's worked in just about every job category, with the exception of animation. He's worked in storyboard, layout, production design, art direction, all these different things. He is a wonderful guy. I am so, so glad that we have him on today. Everybody, welcome Mr. Bob Singer. Hi, Mr. Singer. How are you doing today?
Just fine, Brian. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk with you. I'm going to call you Bob. That's okay, right?
Oh, yes, for sure.
Okay, Bob. Hey, so, everybody out in podcast land wants to know, how'd you grow up? Where'd you grow up?
Well, I grew up in Santa Paula, California. I was born in Santa Barbara, but we finally ended up in Santa Paula, which is between Ventura and Fillmore, north of L.A., mm-hmm. It's a small little town with two mountains on either side.
Right.
But I had heroes in those days. It was Norman Rockwell and Walt Disney Pictures.
Oh, wow.
And I remember when I was about 13, I asked my father for $10. I wanted to buy a Norman Rockwell book. Mm-hmm. And that's how I started waiting every Saturday for a new issue of Saturday Evening Post to come out so I could see his covers.
Wow. Wow. Rockwell was amazing. He lived up in the Northeast here, right?
That's right. Stockbridge in Massachusetts, yes.
That's right. I think that you have the Norman Rockwell Museum up there.
I was up there when I saw the museum years ago.
And they did some Hanna-Barbera exhibit up there at some time.
I was invited to come up too. But my wife was ill, and I didn't want to leave her, so I opted out. But I did a cover for the book that they put out on the exhibit. And I was very interested in drawing. After, in seventh grade, in grammar school, I was doing a drawing I thought was very funny. And I gave it to this girl behind me on the desk. And I said, "Isn't this great?" She didn't think so. So I was determined to make her smile. And I liked my drawing, so I kept working. And then I forgot about her after a while and just got interested in drawing.
Right.
And but I used to draw every night listening to the radio at home.
Right.
And, you know, I found that if I looked the next morning at my drawings, I could tell what was being said on the radio that very, by looking at that singer, that drawing that I made.
Right.
That was an unusual thing that I could do. Isn't that funny?
Wow.
Yeah.
So,
but I did a lot of cartoons for the posters for the dances and things like that.
Oh, that's pretty
good. And neat. Then I went to Ventura JC after high school, doing a weekly paper, a cartoon for the Pirate Press.
Mm-hmm.
And I did one cartoon that had the whole school buzzing the next day. And I got a shot of self-esteem because I was being noticed.
Right.
Are you interested in hearing about that cartoon?
Sure.
Anyway, we had a football game the next day on Saturday. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, I'll do a cartoon with showing a 1936 Chevy at the beach at night from the back. The right. Moon is shining on the water.
Mm-hmm.
And two heads are together in the rear window.
Mm-hmm.
And we see underneath someone saying, "Well, I will if you win the Oxnard game." That one got me a lot of notoriety, I tell you.
Sure.
It got through the censors, okay.
That's good, especially at that time. What year was that?
1946.
Wow.
Yeah, longer, a few years ago.
Yes, yes.
So, and anyway, I went, in 49, I went to the Art Center College in Los Angeles, in Hollywood.
Right.
Spent about 5 years there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I learned how to draw. We did a lot of drawing for the models, so I sharpened my observational skills.
Mm-hmm.
And but when I graduated, there were no jobs left in California that right. I could find. All of them were back east in New York and Chicago.
Right.
But I did finally get a job at an advertising agency in Beverly Hills.
Oh, okay.
And worked there for a year, but only did two drawings in the whole year, just doing pasting up type for ads.
Right.
Until I got a call from a school buddy of mine. He said, "Bob, get your portfolio. Get over here. This is the Seamus Cohen Studios. Somebody just quit. And they need a background painter."
Oh, wow.
So I explained to my bosses a bit ago, and they let me go.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through with my art school portfolio, which was mostly just drawings and illustrations.
Right, right.
But luckily, I had put in two or three drawings of animals acting like people.
Mm-hmm.
And they were actually torn pieces. So I just put it in the back of the portfolio. And Bill Hertz, who was hiring at the time, he actually said, "This kid's got talent," and he hired me to do background painting.
Oh, that's great.
And, of course, I had never painted backgrounds before.
Right.
But in those days, you got into a cartoon studio, and they thought if you had talent, they would teach you.
Sure.
So they put you as an apprentice with a master, and he would show you the ropes. And
who are you working with? Who were you working with there?
Was my art school buddy, Sam Weiss.
Oh, okay.
Who later worked at a cartoon studio in L.A., Jay Ward, I think it was.
Right.
Anyway, he's the one who phoned me, and he put me under his supervision and taught me how to paint backgrounds.
Wow.
And after 2 weeks, he said, Bob, you're on your own. Just go ahead and do it. So that lasted for a year. And it was very interesting to watch a whole studio buzzing with people doing various jobs all in just a small studio.
Culhane was, at that time, he was doing maybe, I'm trying to think, was he doing commercials and educationals? Or
he was doing a series of six science films on the various subjects like the sun, the blood.
Okay. This was for Bell. This was for Bell. This was for the Bell.
Yeah, the Bell Science series.
Yes. Wow.
And they folded up after a year, and I went to freelance, and I was accepting all challenges.
Right.
One of them was to do a storyboard for a commercial, and I had never even heard of a storyboard before. Right. So I went to Sam and said, "Sam, what am I going to do?" I said I would do this board, and he gave me a few hints. He gave me some paper, storyboard paper, and I did it, and it was successful.
Wow.
So I kept accepting challenges, doing slide films, painting backgrounds, until Warner Brothers asked me to come in and work for them on some more of the Bell Science series they were doing. So I did two or three more hour-long boards. Each board was like 500 pieces of paper.
Wow.
Storyboard paper.
Yeah. Who were you working with? Who were you working with there? I know Chuck Jones directed one. And I know Frizz directed another one.
No, this was just for the main studio.
Oh, okay.
And I'm working for a producer there called Owen Crump.
Yes. Yes.
And I noticed in your podcast you mentioned about another guy called Crump.
Raleigh.
I forget his first name.
Rolly Crump?
Yes. I was wondering if he was maybe the son of Owen Crump.
Right. And I think Crump, I think he was related to Blake Edwards, wasn't he?
I don't know about that.
Owen Crump? I thought he was, but maybe I'm wrong. Somebody.
Anyway, he was a producer.
Mm-hmm.
And I did two or three of those hour-long shows, and they wanted to keep me in between. We finished one and started another, so they sent me over to the cartoon studio to paint backgrounds.
Oh, wow.
You know, it would have been tough to get in there if I just applied to Warner Cartoons, but the fact that the studio said, put Bob to work. We need him for another show pretty soon, so luckily, I was hired, and I was put in this room with this other artist who kept smoking a pipe, and we played Frank Sinatra records.
Who?
Bob McGibbon was the other artist.
Oh, Bob Givens.
Bob Givens, yes.
Yes, wow.
And at that time, I didn't know what a famous and good artist he was, helping to design Bugs Bunny.
Oh, yeah. He worked for everybody.
He worked all around town, yes.
Yeah.
A very nice guy, quiet, and smoked a pipe, and we played records all day. It was a great job.
Right.
I painted, I think, 8 different Warner cartoons.
Wow.
Until I got a call from Sam Weiss again at the UPA Pictures. He said, come over here. Somebody just quit.
Right.
And I thought, well, they're offering $50 more. I better go.
Right. Before we move on, Before we move on to UPA, when you were at Warner Brothers, you were working with Bob McKimson. Is that
right? That's right, Bob McKimson. Yes, met him, but I was in his unit. Yes.
Right. Were you exclusive to Bob or Bob McKimson? A lot of Bobs coming up here. Were you exclusive to him, or were you also working for Frizz? Or
I think we did. I painted backgrounds on a Chuck Jones. And then I was offered to become layout man with Frizz Freely because Holly Pratt was leaving.
Yes.
And But then this call came from UPA, and I said, I'm sorry, I'm going to UPA.
Right.
Because I wanted to get into layout.
Yeah.
So that was fortunate, because I was there at UPA for 5 years. Worked there on Mr. Bagoo.
Yeah. You worked on the Christmas Carol?
Yes, I did. I did a lot of layout work for that.
Because I think Mr. Inman, I think he was one of the background
Bob
painters.
Bob Inman was a background painter, yes.
Yeah, they got another Bob.
Well, the Bobs are good guys, you know.
Yeah, I heard that. So did you start on Magoo, or did you, what was the first thing you worked on over there?
It was Mr. Magoo, right. And in about 2.5 weeks, I learned about layout.
Wow.
So Sam said, you know enough, go ahead and do it.
Right.
So I was on my own, but I found that if I made friends with an animator, mm-hmm, and went to him with my problems for staging, he would give me advice. So that was a very good thing to do. Because I learned about an animator's problems and how many poses they want in each scene.
Right.
All of that. So
What animators were that you went to see?
I'm trying to think of the name.
Carlson, maybe, or
no, nope.
I'm trying to think who was working over at UPA. I know Abe Levito was.
He was running the show. Yes.
Yeah, he was. He was amazing, wasn't he?
Yes, I worked for him also at Warner. I did a picture with him called "The Witch's Tangled Hair."
Right.
And another picture I did at Warner's was with Jack Benny and Mary Livingston voices.
Yes, that was
the House of Jack Belt. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a McKimson cartoon.
That's right. And I worked on, there were two of us on it. I did the part where Jack goes down into the vault. Mm-hmm. And I asked the studio if I could do the backgrounds in colored pencil, because it was all wood texture.
Right, right.
And they said, all right, go ahead. And I did do it. And as far as I know, that's the only time any backgrounds were done in colored pencil for a cartoon.
Oh, wow. I have to take another look at that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was quite pleased with it.
Oh, sure. Do you remember what kind, were you using Prismacolor at the time? Do you remember the type of pencils?
Just plain old colored pencils, yeah, Prismacolor pencils, yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's very interesting, because everybody was using gouache, weren't they?
That's right, and all the rest of the pictures I used are the Studio Technique.
Yeah.
Wow. It was really a great gig. I just loved working there.
Oh, sure. I would imagine going from Warner's to UPA, where they were really playing around with the design elements of the backgrounds.
The biggest change was the fact that at Warner's you had like 4 to 6 weeks to paint a background on a picture.
Right.
Maybe you do 2 backgrounds a day, 2.5.
Right.
Whereas at UPA, all of a sudden I was thrust into the cold water of doing theatrical TV layouts.
Right.
And there were quick deadlines, so you had to really work fast.
Do you remember
but
how
I
many?
I found that I liked that working fast.
Right. Do you remember how many layouts you had to do a week?
At UPA, not quite sure. But over at Hanna-Barbera, we had to do 6 a day. But I put myself a deadline of doing 13 a day.
Wow.
You know, there was a man there called Mo Golub. Mm-hmm. Who could do 100 scenes a week.
Wow.
He was so fast and did wonderful backgrounds and layouts too.
Wow.
Anyway, that's another story, but I really enjoyed working on The Christmas Carol and Gay Paree.
Yes. Gay Paree is wonderful. Jitsu.
Yeah, isn't that a great film?
It's beautiful. The title sequence is wonderful, and then you get into the film, and it's really fun to look at. So
it was also Charlotte's Web. I think I was one of the art directors on that.
Oh, well, that was what year? 1971. That's when you went to Hanna-Barbera, right? You'd been there for a little bit.
I got to Hanna-Barbera in 64.
Right.
And they were doing the Johnny Quest. They were just finishing Johnny Quest.
Right.
And the layouts were all completed. So I said, hey, I can paint background. So they put me up upstairs in the background department for, I think, 3 months to paint it on the last three Quest shows.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And then after that, I went downstairs and got into layout.
Went into layout.
On Space Ghost and Dinobor.
Wow. So were you, okay. Just want to go back a little bit on the UPA stuff. UPA,
sure.
You worked on Mr. Magoo and then Dick Tracy, right? You worked on those cartoons?
Oh, yes. We did those too. Yes.
Right. So you were...
I think...
Yeah.
The character Dick Tracy, I think, was drawn by Abe Levito.
Oh,
yeah. Really, he very nice drawing of,
yes,
Dick Tracy.
Yeah, he did. He did a lot of great. I mean, he did some wonderful designs on Gay Paree too.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah. Gay Paree. Chuck Jones did the story. Him and his wife at the time. Was Chuck at the studio working on that, or was this just?
No, he did them in his downtime. While I was working at Warner's.
Right.
And he did the picture. He didn't write a script. He did it as a storyboard.
Right.
And when the studio, Warner Brothers, found out what he was doing, they fired him.
I heard that.
Yeah, because that was a strange thing to happen.
Yeah.
They didn't like the fact that he was working for another studio.
Right. Even though it was released by Warner Brothers, that movie.
That was, yes, well, that's business, you know.
Yeah, well.
So although we couldn't work with his board, we had to reboard the sequences as we went along.
Right.
Because it was not a production board, it was just a storyboard.
Right.
So to make it work, we had to, as we did these sequences, we had to reboard them. And we must have had 4 to 6 layout men working on that show, because it was a full-length feature, of course.
Right. Did you have a lot of time to work on it? I mean, did you get a full year to work on it, or 2 years to work on
it? No, it was done quickly, just in a matter of a few months.
Oh, wow.
Probably 6 months. It was a rush job.
Yeah.
But we had very, very good people on it. Dick Hobbush was one of the art directors,
mm-hmm.
and he sort of did the style for the show.
Right.
And did some wonderful work on it.
Yeah, no, it's a wonderful looking movie. I mean, I know they employed limited animation for that. Do you know how long it took for the full production for Gay Paree between production board and
over the period of a year, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, that's fast for a feature.
It was fast.
It's fast, but it still has a classical quality to it. I mean, it's not quite it's not quite a Disney quality, but it is still a good-looking movie.
Well, they would do limited where they could, and then full where it was needed.
Right.
Put it that way. One day, Judy Garland, who was a star of did the voice of Musette, came by the studio, and I was introduced to her.
Mm-hmm.
All I could do was shake her hand and smile. I couldn't say anything. She giggled and then went on to the next room. Anyway, that was a thrill.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I love my time there. I learned all about... That was the first time to work on a feature, too.
You were pulled off Magoo to work on that? Or how did that work? Were you working on the Magoos?
Well, I guess the Magoos were finished.
Mm-hmm.
And we made room for this production to go in. Yeah. And we did a lot of famous adventures of Mr. Magoo later.
Right.
And they were like, I think, 30 minutes long.
Oh, they're great.
Oh, yeah. We had a lot of fun on that show.
I love that show. And I'm going to be 62 this year. And I guess I'm a youngster.
You are. But, you're talking to a 95-year-old.
Well, yeah, but, you know, you sound great. I I remember watching those things in the 60s and mm-hmm. even in the 70s and just loving every minute of them. I thought they were very, very well done.
We enjoyed those doing those.
Yeah. Did you end up when you were finished, I guess when they had these things in editing, when they had the animation done, did you screen those?
We had a small theater on the studio.
Right.
And they would call us, if we could see one. I remember Henry J. Saperstein was the man who bought the studio
right.
from Steve Basisto. When we showed Gay Paree, I think it was in the studio, Henry was watching it with us and he became very emotional. There was tears in his eyes. He was so proud of that picture.
Yeah. I've seen that picture many times over the years. So mm-hmm. it's a wonderful movie.
Yeah.
Was UPA was in Toluca Lake, wasn't it?
Yeah, right across
like by the smokehouse.
Universal Pictures.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right near the school. That's right. Yes.
It's on the block with the smokehouse, right?
That's right.
Do you know if that building is still there? I think
no. It was. I believe it was torn down and it was rebuilt.
Wow.
And next time I was there, I was visiting Walter Lantz.
Mm-hmm.
And he had an office in that building.
Right. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Was it a really nice, I heard it was a very nice studio to work at, UP.
It was open. They had a big patio in the middle of these grounds of the studio.
Right.
And it was very relaxed atmosphere. Everybody pulled his own weight. They were a very good staff of artists. Yeah.
Right. Right. Did the staff from there go to the smokehouse a lot?
We used to go there. We would watch the movie stars like James Gardner coming in from Universal having lunch.
Right. I work for Don Bluth and I've done a little bit of work for Hanna-Barbera and Warner Brothers and, you know.
What kind of work did you do, Brian?
I did layout and animation and storyboard.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So I was working at Warner Brothers in Sherman Oaks for a while there. But
great.
But we mm-hmm. When I was working for Don Bluth, we had a couple of meetings at the smokehouse, and I knew a little bit about the history before going in there, and it was I felt a little bit starstruck, you know, with the history. So so what was the last thing you did at UPA? Was that Adventures of Mr. Magoo?
I think it might have been
right.
Charlotte's Web, because the studio closed down.
Yeah,
But I kept working for a few months with Art Babbitt, who was doing commercials there.
Oh, okay.
And I would do layouts and paint backgrounds.
Oh, wow.
For GE light bulb commercials.
Oh, I remember those.
So, and then later on, I took a course in animation from Art.
Mm-hmm.
He was teaching a 16-week. Although I was a layout man, I wanted to learn more about animation.
Sure.
So I could do better posing.
Right.
And, but after that, I went over to, I got a job over at Chuck Jones Tower 12.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there 2.5 weeks when I discovered that the work I was doing, I was only considered an assistant layout man with Morris Noble.
Oh.
And I didn't like the idea that I wasn't, he was redoing my work in his style. So I left there and went to Hanna-Barbera, that's where I first got hired over there.
Right.
1964.
Wow. So it was Johnny Quest that you were working on.
Yes, the tape painting background. And then the problem we had was all the Quest crew was mostly illustrators that they brought in from New York to do it because we were just cartoony guys.
Right.
We only had Moog Olive and Tony Segura who could draw that way.
Yeah.
So when all those guys were laid off because the Quest show was done, we were stuck with having to do this new adventure-style show of Danny Boy and what was the other one?
Space Ghost?
Space Ghost, yes.
Yeah.
And I thought I'd better learn how to draw this stuff again so I can remember what I did in art school. So I took Tarzan comic books home and I was copying all the drawing, trying to get used to the figures again.
Yeah.
And I was able to get by doing that.
Right.
But we had trouble with Space Ghost. It was a new show and was behind schedule. And Alex Toff was doing, for some reason, had just quit the studio.
Right.
And so I knew what I had to do. They asked me to take charge of the layout on that show.
Right.
So I went and I took Alex to lunch and begged him to stay, and he did. And that saved our neck because he ended up knowing all the models for every show.
Right.
Plus, after that was done, he would do Herculoids and other adventure-style shows that were now popular.
Right.
So it's a good thing we had Alex.
Yeah, definitely. Because a lot of the other people, a lot of the animators there were from the Tom and Jerry, either from Tom and Jerry or they're working at work.
Yes,
they came from Disney.
Crew.
Yeah.
That's right. So they did a nice job on the Space Ghost.
Right. So and, Space Ghost was a fun show. I loved that show as a kid.
It's still very popular, I think.
Oh, yeah.
The character.
I think they all are. I think, you know, I don't know if they're running these things. I think Boomerang, which is
I think they do on Cartoon Channel.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. It's a little frustrating. I've found myself going out and buying some of these things on DVD just to have access to the material.
And
at least Warner Archive is making that available. So I think that's a good thing. All those shows from Hanna-Barbera.
Oh yeah.
What
I think Turner buy all of the library. I think recently I read that somewhere.
Yeah, Turner bought the whole Hanna-Barbera studio.
Yeah, $162 million.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
Incredible. And I think they're going after the stuff that, and you worked on the Scooby-Doo. I think they're really leaning into that.
Yeah, I was working on the crew that did a new show development.
Wow.
And that was one of the shows we worked on, Scooby. And Evil brought me a drawing of the Misty Mobile and said, color it. So I thought, well, what do I do? Well, I knew at that time the flower children movement in Hollywood was pretty strong, so I just put flowers on it.
Oh, there you go.
And for some reason, it caught on. It's still very popular. People, where I live in Clovis, there are a couple of cars driving around with that painted like a Mystery Mobile.
A Mystery Mobile, yeah. I think they've merchandised the car, haven't they?
Yeah, they've made some little car toys. Yeah.
Yeah. They've definitely made money off of Scooby-Doo over the years.
Well, Scooby is still popular, but the trouble is they have redesigned all the characters, and I'm really not happy with that.
I know.
I do a lot of commission work, and I always go back to the old model sheets and try to be as close to them as I can.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a real problem today. Is like, you know, the powers that be keep trying to want to change things that are already successful.
Well, I saw the Mickey Mouse Runaway Railroad with Mickey Mouse and Minnie, and they've changed also.
Yes,
but they have no warmth, no character. They're just empty. You know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that's happening.
Are you talking about the attraction at Disneyland, or
that's the one? Yes.
Yeah. I I saw it. I thought it was fun, but I think the I think you're right about that. I think the characters are kind of cold. And
yeah, very cold. You can't really get next to them now.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, there was a story that Walt Disney, I guess they were trying to, let me try to remember the story correctly. They were after Sleeping Beauty and after 101 Dalmatians. It was in the early 60s there, and they're mm-hmm. trying to figure out what was going to be the next project. And so they had two groups. They had one guy who was Bill Peet, who was a story guy, and very good. And he was developing the Sword in the Stone picture. And the other group, which was a lot of animators involved, were developing a story, which was Chanticleer. And basically, the two groups presented the stories. And so the Chanticleer story was pitched first, and Walt Disney sat through it, and he just said, you know, who'd want to hug a rooster? And he went and got the Sword in the Stone pitch, and he went with that because there were cute animals in it and stuff. So it's interesting. Interesting why things get made. But
I think Walt Peregoy painted backgrounds on that show.
He did. I knew Walt Peregoy. I worked with him at Sullivan Blues Studios on a special project.
And he also was head of background over at Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Did you get along with Walt?
Oh, yeah. He was a very nice guy.
Yeah.
He was a wonderful painter.
He was. He had this big Cadillac that he used to drive, which it was like a boat. It was like a giant boat going down the freeway. So he was very nice. He was very very pleasant to work with.
Well, his character was similar to that car then, because he was also up and going and talked loud and. Everybody liked him. He was great.
Yes, he was. He was a character. He was a character, and he was a very, very nice gentleman. Did you work on? You worked on Herculoids. Did you work on that, or?
I didn't work directly on the show, but I did a lot of publicity work, of it for them. Yes,
right. And I saw something you did for Frankenstein Jr. and the Impossibles, and I don't think you worked on that show though, but.
No. Later on, I became a layout supervisor.
Right.
And my name appeared in a lot of credits for those shows I never worked on.
Wow.
So,
right.
It was mostly Scooby. Scooby went on for, 6 years or so?
Wow. So you worked on all the different versions of Scooby?
Yes. I didn't work on the second time it was produced with Cosmo Angelotti. I didn't work on that, no.
Oh, you didn't work with Cosmo on that?
No, I didn't.
Okay. No. Cosmo was a New York guy, wasn't he?
Yes, he came over and he picked up running that new Scooby show.
Right.
13 Ghosts or something like that.
Right. They did.
Anyway.
Yeah, I don't. How many incarnations of Scooby-Doo? I mean, they had the Scooby-Doo movies, the new Scooby-Doo movies.
Those were later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was Scooby and Scrappy-Doo.
And then they brought in people like Sonny and Cher,
yes,
and Don Knotts to be guest stars. And we would do. There's a story about. You know, my age. I'm losing some names occasionally. Jonathan Winters came in to do a show.
Yes,
on Scooby, and I had to redesign the alter ego of the old lady that Jonathan used to use in his act.
That's right, the old, yes.
And because of the story, I changed the look of what was her name? I forget.
I forgot. Your memory is better than mine, I have to say.
Well, anyway, I just redesigned it after the show was through layout and into animation.
Right.
Alex Lowy called in, who's producing, and he said, Bob, why didn't we use the alter ego of Jonathan Winters' old lady.
Right.
And I said, well, it wouldn't work.
Right.
You know, the story wouldn't work if they put his face on the old lady.
Right.
So he agreed with me. See, after years later, he said, Bob, you were right. But I thought I might have been in hot water.
Yeah.
You know, Jonathan Winters would come to the studio, and the layout department was empty. Mm-hmm. And in the back, in the back of the studio, in the parking lot, there was a whole group of the workers, including the layout department.
Right.
And in the middle, Jonathan Winters doing his stick, keeping everybody laughing and joking and just doing everything.
Oh, wow.
And he was a wonderful guy to do that.
Yeah, there are a couple of people like that in Hollywood that they always love to have an audience.
Oh yeah,
and I think Red Skelton was one of those guys.
Well, I wouldn't doubt it. Yeah,
yeah, Red Skelton and Dom DeLuise, I heard was like that. So just love the attention.
Yeah, I can see that. Yes.
Yeah, just love the attention.
So, I have an aside on Red Skelton.
Wait, what was
he did wonderful paintings of clowns.
That's right.
And I was in Hawaii at a circle gallery, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And they were they had a lot of skeleton work on the walls.
Right.
And I found one that wasn't right, had his name on it.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the manager and said, hey, that is not a red skeleton. And he said, oh, of course it is. We wouldn't do something like that. Right. Put our name on someone else's work. Of course not. He was huffy. Years later, I read that they were sued for fraud
because
they put there because of things like that.
Oh, boy.
But there's no way Red never saw the inside of an art school.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just a wonderful, had his own style, did some beautiful work.
Yes.
But he was an amateur.
Yeah.
But he was, you know, some amateurs do wonderful work like Grandma Moses.
Oh, yeah.
You remember those?
Yes.
Anyway, that's my story on Red Skelton.
That's interesting.
So back to business.
Yeah. Back to business here. Yeah. So, when you were working at Hanna-Barbera, did you enjoy working over there? I would imagine.
Well, I heard before I went there that they were a sweatshop.
Yeah.
But when I got there, I reveled in the fast pace.
Yeah.
Because it was very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to figure out, how am I going to do these so fast?
Right.
So what I did was I invented for myself a background chart.
Right.
A way of doing layouts by figuring all the backgrounds and putting scenes on the backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only had a few number of backgrounds.
Right.
And then I decided not to do scenes 1, 2, 3, and 4 in layout. I would do 1. Then 17 and 34,
right,
because they use the same backgrounds.
Right.
And many times they have the same material.
Right, right.
Anyway, years later, some kid came from Canada to visit. He said, you know, Bob, I learned about this background chart that we do up there. And I said, yeah, I invented it. Anyway.
That's great. No, that's great. That's great stuff.
Some of my people picked it up and used it in layout.
I think a lot of people have picked up all this, you know, all the stuff that you invented, and then and they apply it to their work.
You know, one of the things I invented, every time there was a pan of the sky, they would do one for a regular painting,
mm-hmm,
a tilt pan this way, a tilt pan that way, the vertical pan.
Right.
I invented what's called a pan that worked for all the scenes, no matter what direction the clouds went and the camera went. It was called a circular cloud pan or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The clouds all had circles. They were, you know, when you look up at a sky, you see round shapes like a piece of cotton. That's what I used for the pan for the clouds.
Oh, wow.
And that saved a lot of background.
Do you have any questions or comments about the podcast? Please email Brian at cartoonerific.com. Your email may be featured in one of our future shows.
Hey, wasn't that a lot of fun? Bob Singer will be back next week for part 2, so you won't want to miss that. You know, I just want to thank everybody for all the wonderful comments that you've emailed me about the podcast, and I appreciate all the suggestions that you've made for shows and possible guests. Now, I've mentioned this before. I reach out to a lot of different people. Some people do not want to be on the podcast. They're either shy or they just don't feel good in front of a microphone. So I will keep plugging away. I will. And hopefully we can get some of those people on. But it is sometimes it is a trick to get people to actually do an interview here on the Cartoonerific podcast. So anyway, stay tuned. We're going to have some great guests on the weeks ahead. Don't miss next week's episode with Mr. Bob Singer. If you really like what you're listening to, please subscribe or tell a friend. Anyway, I want everybody to have a great day. I want you to have an excellent week, and we'll see you all again next time. Thank you once again for tuning in.
This has been a Cartoonerific Studios presentation.
The Cartoonerific podcast is copyright 2024 by Cartoonerific Studios Incorporated. All rights reserved.